I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If I'm better as a person and I wake up each day healthier, happier, sharper, fitter, I'll be a better investor.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Torrin Shum, and in this episode, we're back with Matt Schramer, the former rugby league player who's now kicking goals in property investment. He'll share why he became a real estate agent after retiring from professional rugby league, his current strategies that he's implemented to land the best deal, and how to continue to increase cash flow, and much, much more. Matt Schramer starts by revealing how many properties he currently holds in his portfolio.
At the moment, there's 5 in the portfolio. It sits around 2.5 million with a 60% LVR. So yeah, they've all done pretty well. But I'm at the point now where, and this is, I guess, another real big lesson I've learned as well, is the power of servicing and stuff like that, and how you can boost your case to the bank, so to speak, because, you know, I do what I love, you know, I coach and do that. But to be honest, it's a minimum wage job, and being a single income earner on my own as well, there's a ceiling basically, and I'm nearly at that ceiling around the 2.5-3 mark. Once you get to that in asset value, it's sort of like, okay, I'm at a point now where I've got to sort of think of different ways to boost cash flow and look at different things like that, which I've got in place at the moment. But to answer your question, yeah, there's 5 in there at the moment. Yeah.
He reveals one of the worst investing moments he has had throughout his journey.
I've got a quick little story on, I dodged a bullet and I'm glad I did. Basically, I was looking at, and this is a good one for investors because they might not realize it as well, but I got to around my third, fourth one, and I was looking for my third property, and I really was interested in like the dual income, not the brand new stuff, like the top upstairs, downstairs, like low, like the, you know what I mean? Like the dual living.
Dual-oc, yeah.
Yeah, like a dual living setup. Like an established one, not brand new. So an old style property, had the upstairs down. Anyways, I found this one, and the ROI, like the rental yield, was at nearly like 8%, 8.5% sort of thing. And there was room to manufacture equity and stuff like that. And I just sort of looked at it. I was like, oh yeah, for sure. And then something happened with the building a pest failed on it. And so I don't know, it just needed a bit more than a little, it was like structural sort of stuff. So I walked away from the deal, but then I did a bit more research and spoke to solicitor and property managers and stuff, and then realized, you just got to be careful with the upstairs, downstairs, if it's not legal hired and if it's not sort of by, so the guy was renting it, but it wasn't by the books or anything. It was all sort of, under grade.
Cash on hand.
Yeah, cash in hand and for insurance, like if something happens to the tenant downstairs, you're liable, like all these sorts of things. And it sort of made me really, because I was so interested in the yield, I didn't even think about like the risk type play, if that makes sense. So I felt I was a better educated investor after that, to really look at each property and assess risk first, before diving into, if the numbers look attractive, do your due diligence is what I'm trying to say, where I probably didn't do enough on that purchase. I didn't end up getting it, But which worked out. So that was something that that was a big sort of lesson for me. And in terms of biggest mistake, I would say they've all been pretty good. I guess the only thing would be one of my favorite sayings now is you make your money on the way in property. And probably my first property, as I said, like the agent listed it at a price, and then I just sort of looked at it and said, oh yeah, I'll offer a little bit below that. And then, you know, I mean, we come to an agreement, whatever. But knowing what I know now, I think negotiation is such a cool part of the process. I think, and it's such a big one where you can make money on the way in just through a little bit of research and dialogue and stuff like that. So just little things like find out what the reason for sale is. You know, I don't get why people don't ask, like, hey, do you mind me asking what the reason for sale is here? You know what I mean? And obviously I ask in a kind way, like, you know what I mean? And most of the time they'll tell you. And then do your research. You should know what's selling in the area in terms of a four bed, one bath. You already know roughly what that, and then as soon as a property comes on the market around that price and you sort of do your research and there is a bit of motivation, well, then you can sort of judge your offers off that. And and even things like terms, like sometimes if the motivation's high, you don't always have to negotiate on the price. You can actually negotiate on the terms, like the building and pest, the finance and stuff like that. So I always say to people who, whenever I chat to friends or when I'm helping people, is like, get all your ducks lined up, like your finance, have your solicitor ready, make sure everything's ready to go, so when the right property does come, you're a strong buyer and you can negotiate on different things like terms and the motivation to sale and settlement. Even settlement, always ask, like is there a settlement term that would suit the seller, you know, make it feel like you're helping them, so to speak. So yeah, I found a lot of those things helped me when I was negotiating after property one, that really I felt I got most of them well under market value.
Yeah, that's really, really true, because it's like trying to negotiate a win-win situation. You know, the vendors are looking to sell and actually don't mind having a longer term because they're probably looking for another place to move, or they need to sell because they're having a divorce or whatever, you know, the reasons is. Negotiating the terms is probably also a key point, you know, not necessarily on price, but majority of the time, if there's an urgency, then price would obviously, you know, be a factor that plays. But yeah, all these things that you've mentioned is so, so important. And simple questions, but I think people just tend to overlook it, because it's if you're not an investor, it's quite easily looking at the property and going, falling in love with it emotionally, and then, you know, offering whatever price. And then if you start seeing a lot of buyers come in, you go, oh, hold on, there's a buying frenzy here, I better offer. and then that's where it just takes it out of the picture. So
100%, and you nailed it on the head. That's one of my favorite sayings. Think of negotiation as a win-win, like not you against the agent and the sellers. It's like, how can I respectfully manipulate the scenario so it's like it's a win for me, but also I've got to come across as if I'm trying to help the sellers as well and communicate that with the agent. So, you know, even and get along with the agent. So many people are so cold to the agent. It's like, be their friends. Like, well, mate, they want to get paid. So it's like, work with them, man. You know, I always used to throw dialogue, like just say the name Jim or whatever, like, Jim, mate, I know you want to get paid, man. Like, we'll get it done today. Let's go. You know what I mean? And they laugh with you, and then we all work together. So that's how you get good deals, I reckon.
Shrama reflects on the moment where everything just clicked for him.
At the start and during, it's like when you get the rental income coming in, like into your bank account, and then, you know, your repayments, if you've bought well and, you know, you bought at the right price and you got your loan structured properly and, you know, with all that side of things, you sort of look at your balance sheet and you're like, far out. Like, it's just like another little income. Like, it's another little job. Like, you're getting paid X amount into your bank account from one property. Imagine if you had three properties or four properties or five or 10, you know what I mean? It's like little side jobs in a way. That's how I see the whole portfolio as a business as a whole, you know what I mean? So the aha moment is like, I've got it's a business. There's expenses and there's things you need to manage and control, but there's also income coming in. So it's like, you should take it serious. It's like, this is setting you up for your future. The aha moment, I guess, is just realizing that this is bigger than just buying a property and putting a tenant in. It's providing shelter for people and getting a return on that. And you're the CEO of this like company. If that's sort of, it's kind of related in that sort of sense. And I like to treat my portfolio in that sense, like look at my spreadsheet and make sure everything's running smooth and property managers are doing what they need to do and make sure the tenants are happy, all that sort of stuff. So the aha moment is like, well, yeah, it's bringing in, I'm going to bed each night and there's money coming in. Just keep doing that. But yeah, don't ever, and probably the risk factor thing as well, like I never like to over leverage on anything. So that always helps as well.
The successful investor shares at what stage he began to formulate his property strategy.
It was more, okay, let me try and get some property with all the fundamentals. Do you know what I mean? All the basic stuff, like no high body corporates, land content, houses if possible, depending on the area, obviously. All the usual bread and butter stuff that all educated investors know. But as I went probably third and fourth one, and even where I'm at now, I'm still continual learning. I'm at a stage now where I've got some really good base assets that have done really well capital growth wise, and you know they're paying for themselves, but maybe I can shift the strategy a little bit to look at how I can improve cash flow, because cash flow is king, really. You know, capital growth is where the real wealth is at. I still believe that, but there's no point having a heap of capital growth properties if you can't hold them either and you can't sleep at night. So for me, it's like I want to balance the portfolio. It's pretty much positive at the moment. I'd like to invest into like one of the big majors, like your Melbourne or Sydney, something like that for capital growth, and also something with cash flow. But I guess in terms of strategy, something to balance each other out is what I'm trying to say. Maybe I'm looking at it as a macro, as a portfolio, rather than the next one asset is my strategy. If that sort of makes sense, yeah. And I think a lot of the best investors, from what I've learned, are sort of doing that, I guess, balancing their portfolio.
He reveals some of his tips that he's currently implementing to increase his cash flow on his properties.
I've spent the last 2 days, I've got a renovation coming up. Unfortunately, due to COVID and all that, it's unfortunate times. One of the tenants in one of my properties has moved out, been there since day one. And, you know, a really good area, great little unit. It's a two-bed unit. So this was the very first investment property that I got. It's the only unit in my portfolio. So they said they're leaving, which is fine. And then I got that unit back then on the basis of land component. So it's in a block of eight. So basically I'm a 1/8 owner of, you know, a nice big solid corner block close to the water. And fundamentally, you know, everything low body corporate, old brick. And it's really original. Like it's putrid. I don't like it. Like I would never. Location wise, beautiful, awesome location. In terms of interior, yeah, I don't like going in there. And you know, I'm okay with that. I left it as it is. It's just getting its rent, paying itself off. But now seeing where it's at, the tenants moved out, and I've looked at how fast the rental market has moved. It's got some good capital growth, but now it's like, okay, I can take advantage of this rental growth now. How can I manufacture that? So, yeah, just a simple renovation. You know, you hear it all the time, manufacturing your own equity. So, through renovation, I'm just going to really do a basic, not overcapitalizing on anything, just kitchen, bathroom, flooring, paint, and lights and fans. And literally that's it. So hoping to spend the max 5% of what it's worth, you know, somewhere around that 10-ish mark max. And then, yeah, just get it. The rent will go up done the math, it should go up around $50, $60 a week. $40 to $50 a week, based on where is that in original condition. And yeah, it will improve the capital value a bit. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, renovation's probably a big one. If you're buying good on the way in, you know, you've got equity there. And then I guess if you can do a simple reno, you can also add equity there. Yeah, so I always like the secondhand stock. You know, that's just my preference. Some people like brand new, but personally I like secondhand stock where the land component is the breadwinner, finding where that's going to grow. And then, yeah, if I can improve the inside of it with a little reno, well, yeah, that's a win in my books. But, yeah, everyone's got different strategies, I guess.
Coming up after the break, we hear about the kinds of resources that have contributed to Schrama's success.
You've got to be educated in what you do. But my go-tos, mate, are podcasts, like honestly, like yourself. The Property Couch is really good.
The best advice he's ever received
was, I think it was when I was on the Property Couch, and the boys mentioned a little saying, it's like location does 80% of the heavy lifting. Really basic one.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. He discusses his strategy for the future, and if he'll continue to buy and renovate, or whether to branch out on other kinds of strategies.
At this stage, probably in terms of my knowledge base, as I said, I'm a young guy and I by no means know much more than most people on this. You know what I mean? Like I'm forever learning, and my capacity at the moment is just that. I don't know. I like development and stuff like that. But to be honest, I just don't know enough about it. And, you know, I'm not one to sort of have a risk until I understand the process more than anything. And for me, I've just seen what's been working at the moment, just with the buy and hold long-term, getting that fundamental base, I think, especially while I'm sort of in my 20s. I really just want those good bread and butter assets that I can keep adding value and growing. But as you said, now that I'm sort of got a good little foundation, yeah, I have looked into, you know, whether it's JVs or, you know, maybe like a dual, looking at a legalized dual occupancy or flat share. Or I've looked at everything, looked at all the different sorts of styles, and there's nothing that I'm fully educated and aware of the process just yet. And, you know, that's why I love reaching out to people. So the more I'll keep learning and understanding, the more I'll look into it. But yeah, at the moment, I'm just looking to get rich very slow, not sort of in the get rich quick scheme. But I do also believe in paying down debt as well. So that's a process. You know, once I get into my 30s or 40s, maybe I will do a JV or a capital play where I can pay down some debt on some of the properties. You know, to really extract them even more equity and put it somewhere else. So. Just at this stage, it's just accumulation, yeah.
Schrama goes on to talk about when he was a real estate agent and what it was like.
I spent 1 year as a real estate sales agent working for McGrath Estate Agents. Yeah, I did that as I was retiring. It was literally, I'd done my course while I was still playing. So I'd finished training and do my course. And then, I became a sales agent and, yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved the process, but then, it sounds funny. I like the, it's not really anything to do with buying. It's more a people game, which I enjoyed, and I love sales. But, I really wanted to get into, hence why I've started buyers agency. Now I got out of real estate, got back into the sports sector. And basically I've been in that while I'm sort of just building my buyers agency now. But, yeah, real estate was awesome. I learned, obviously, the other side of the negotiation and how they market property. And, some of the dialogue agents use. It's really cool to know. Now, as a property investor, I always have that up my sleeve.
Totally. And at least now you know how to deal with agents because you know how they play the game as well too.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why I can't stress enough is like man, they're doing their job. So give them their respect. I know there is some out there, you know, that there are some egos in the game, but at the end of the day, just through dialogue and simple tactics, you can actually really extract a lot out of the agent in that scenario of buying property. So, yeah, it's cool to know both sides of the coin, I guess.
He shares with us the kinds of resources that have helped him along his journey.
Yeah, shout out to YouTube. They were great, old YouTube. Yeah, YouTube just got everything and anything, doesn't it? It's I used to just type in like property investing, and then you'd see everything, don't you? Like the dudes in front of a Lamborghini, and then you're just like, what the hell? Like, seriously? And then like saying you can get rich to retire in 24 hours. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. So yeah, you got to be careful of what's out there as well. There's a bit of everything everywhere. So you got to be educated in what you do. But my go-tos, mate, are podcasts. Like honestly, like yourself, the Property Couch is really good. Bryce and Ben, I've been on their podcast a few times. They're really good. They're changing the game, I think, in a positive sense. And also, Australian Smart Property Investment podcast, they're really good. Your podcast, there's a few out there. And then also just books and not even so much about finance, like the finance books are great, Rich Dad, Poor Dad and all those sorts of ones. But mindset, I think mindset's a big one, like understanding yourself, being self-aware and personal growth, like understanding how you react to things and like human behavior and I think mindset's huge, because if you're not confident in anything, you know what I mean, if you're not confident as an investor, you'll make a rational decision. And as you know, like you got to be clear-headed. So I love stuff where it's like, how can I be the best version of Matt Sharma as a person, not as an investor? Because if I'm better as a person and I wake up each day healthier, happier, sharper, fitter, I'll be a better investor, and that stuff will come. But I don't think you can be a great investor or great anything, great athlete, anything, if you are not looking after you and your brain and your health. So yeah, I love the personal development books, podcasts, and YouTube. Yeah.
Is there any one particular book that you'd recommend that people could read about mindset or personal development that you've really enjoyed?
We could go on for days in this section, but No. To save the boredom of all your listeners, like I love personal. I'm one of them personal growth junkies. But get onto just a quick one to add value. There's a really cool app called Blinkist. I'm not like paid for it or anything. Don't worry. But that Blinkist app's cool. It's like shortened audio books in like 15 minutes of all the best personal development, finance, negotiate, like all personal development books. You can digest them in 15 minutes. So I listen to basically a new book every day when I make my smoothie. So it's been unreal, like in terms of that sense. But some just off the top of my head without looking into my list, a really cool basic one is, this is just like more for relationships and people, is that How to Win Friends and Influence People. I really like that. Like just, I think you need to have interpersonal communication skills and be able in any form of life, I think. Like, and I think it helps with investing as well, like when you're talking to agents and stuff like that and negotiating. What's another one? The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is a really cool oldie, just a nice basic one. Tools of Titans is a good one. Yeah, there's heaps out there. Out of the maze. There's one called Out of the Maze. That one really struck with me, and that one's about like when things don't go to plan in life and resilience and stuff like that. So those sort of things I think are good, because as an investor and as a human, you know, not everything goes to plan, you know what I mean? So it's I think it's important to know how to deal with things like that so you're still sharp.
Sharma reflects on the best advice he has ever received throughout his journey.
always had plenty of advice. Like, I love quotes and stuff like that. Probably one that just sticks out just as you said it was, I think it was when I was on the property couch and the boys mentioned a little saying, it's like, location does 80% of the heavy lifting. Really basic one, so basic. And I know there's a lot of variables to that, but if you have that in mind, like, it's pretty true. Like, it does do most of the lifting, like location. It could be the best property in the world, but if it's in a poor location, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. So, yeah, I think location does most of the lifting. And yeah, the one I said before is like, you can make your money on the way in.
If he had some time to reflect on his past self 10 years ago, we find out what he would have said to himself.
I would say be patient. Be patient is a big one. Be patient and play the long game. Just play the long game. And be patient, play the long game with consistency. So keep doing the little things that make a big difference, but keep doing them every day. If you don't see results in the first 2 weeks, 6 months, whatever, you're getting little results, keep doing it and keep staying consistent with it. I think anything worth having in life, I think, whether it's property, whether it's sport, whether it's life, anything worth having won't happen overnight. It's going to take persistence and hard work regardless. So keep being persistent with it. Keep refining your strategies as you go. Don't ever think you know it all, because once you think you know it all, that's when you're in danger, I think, yeah.
Shrama looks forward to the future, where he shares what is happening for him in the upcoming 5 years.
The next 5 years, yeah, I'm really excited for 2020 and beyond, obviously. I'm at a place now, within the portfolio where I felt, I understand a little bit more than what I did than the last one, which is obviously each one I keep learning more. So I've got a lot more clarity with what I want within the portfolio, and I understand the game of finance a lot more now. So, which has obviously led me to wanting to become an entrepreneur now. So it's like, I don't want to ceiling on my borrowing capacity, so I can keep going. And the next 5 years for me is about, accumulation and building a business and becoming an entrepreneur and really delving into that space. Because, it's been something I've always wanted to do. So, become an entrepreneur and also, with the coaching, I want to keep coaching kids and stuff like that. I get a lot of fulfillment out of that. And, just on a personal level, keep working hard and staying, as you said, just staying consistent with everything and keep learning.
Last question for you, Matt, is how much of your success is due to your skill, intelligence and hard work, or how much of it is luck?
Good question. I would say we create our own luck, to be honest. Nothing annoys me more when, because it used to happen in sport a lot when people would say, oh, he's so lucky. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's people don't see behind the scenes. And to a degree, that sometimes it's right place, right time. But I think we, what's the saying? I think we have to prepare for when those opportunities come. So, for instance, if a lucky opportunity does come where somehow the universe is aligned in property terms, like a deal just comes to play, like that, like a unicorn deal. And you're like, if you're not prepared, if you don't know the process, if you don't know how to negotiate on the, you know what I mean? You'll miss that opportunity. Same in sport. Like if you've got called into NRL, for next week and you haven't been doing all your little things, like you haven't been sleeping well, you've been on, you've been going out drinking and stuff like that, you're going to go into that opportunity and not take it with both hands. So I think a lot of it is hard work and, as we said, staying consistent, boring as it sounds, staying consistent, being disciplined around your why and why you're doing it. And then when that luck does come, because I believe everyone's got luck, everyone's got little points of life where the universe meets, and some of us don't take advantage of it, and some of us are prepared and we nail it when it comes. So I think that's the most important thing. It's perspective as well. Like, some people can't see the luck that's in their life. They're just looking at all the negatives. So perspective is a big one.
Thank you to Matt Schramer, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey and get a copy of the show notes on the website, head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes. The show notes will give you the inside scoop of the little gold nuggets of wisdom all our guests share from their backstory and all the overall strategies and philosophies. Plus, you'll get a copy of their advice broken down and shared in a quick and easy to consume format. Just head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes and download it today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.